This week in Journeys with Wendy, Journeys with Jwendy, I'm going to tell you the story of the second part of my beautiful brain journey, which details my experience getting neurosurgery at Vancouver General Hospital, which I am extremely grateful for their expertise and their care and their love and their skills. And I wrote all my thoughts out, so I thought I would just read it for the podcast just so I don't miss anything out. It was really a learning experience as well as being a health transformative experience. And I called it, "Hope is the wind that fuels our souls. Lessons from the neurosurgery ward." I've never had to climb a mountain so high as I did this last week. I was scared, petrified. After a year of diagnostic testing, the week had finally come. I was to have neurosurgery. For the last year, I knew this was on the table in my future, but there's something about a surgery date that shakes you to the core. So many worries crossed my mind on repeat every day as I led up to the surgery. This was not just a day surgery or something light. This was accessing the outer parts of my brain on either side of my brainstem to remove two arteriovenous fistulae. The only way to prevent me from having a brain bleed or aneurysm in the future was to have them removed. The doctor had explained to me that the longer I waited, the more risk I increased. I knew I had to be brave, even though I just wanted to run into a hole. But I had a little girl with autism that needs her mommy around. And she needs her mommy to do hard things. And she needs her mommy to be strong and fight for health. I had no choice but to move forward with surgery. As the weeks approached, I knew I could not handle this alone. This was going to take a team of positivity. This was going to take all the prayer warriors and positive vibes I could rally up. Even though my love as a mother is so strong, it wasn't enough. I needed an army of hope behind me. I reached out by email, Facebook, text to all the people I knew who would give me strength. This was not a time to talk to anyone who would shed fear or worry on my situation. I needed the hopers, and I found them. I rallied the troops and asked them to pray for me every day and send me positive vibes and healing energy, and they did. I've always been a spiritual person, but I'm also a sciencey person. I just love when I can find a PubMed article that confirms what I've always intuited. I've known in my heart all my life that prayer is important, and I had recently read a research article about the science behind prayer improving health outcomes. It inspired me even more to ask for help in the form of prayer and hope. I needed all the magic of the universe and my Heavenly Father and the principles of quantum physics to merge together for a positive outcome. 2 days before the surgery, my dear friend from grade school drove me down to Vancouver to hand me off to my incredible sister. It took all of my strength to say goodbye to my daughter, knowing there was a huge mountain to climb before I would see her again. After leaving my city in the interior of British Columbia, I just pretended I was on a fun summer road trip, and it mostly worked. My dear friend and I had funny banter all the way to the coast, and I forgot about the surgery for a few hours. Well, not forgot, but it seemed to slide into the back seat for a while. When we arrived in Vancouver, we went out for dinner on the Fraser River. Watching the planes ascend and then descend from Vancouver International Airport, I could forget about my impending neurosurgery that was now less than 48 hours away. I even started to dream about future trips I might take from that airport once I was healed. Of course, the IPA craft beer I was drinking helped me with that. The next day, my friend departed to go back to our hometown and left me in the care of my sweet sister. This was when reality hit me. I was now blocks from the hospital. I was far from my daughter. I was 36 hours from surgery. I was scared and wanted to cancel the surgery. I felt overwhelmed with sadness and grief. I felt like I couldn't do it, like I didn't have the strength to get through the battle that was ahead of me. Sorry, still emotional. I'm only 7 days post-op. My sister coached me. All you have to do is get your body there. That's it. Once your body is there, they will take over. I could not have got through this without her. She took me on long meandering walks along the river that day, and I got a good night's sleep. Good sleep 2 nights before surgery. I woke up the day before surgery and felt a glimmer of hope. I felt like I could do this. We hopped in the car and went to my pre-op anesthesiologist meeting at the hospital. He asked me my weight, my allergies, let me know comforting facts like some people have gone blind after surgery. Ugh. My sister saw my anxiety started to build and quickly made a joke to make me laugh. She gave me hope. After my pre-op appointment, we met my sweet nieces at my favorite restaurant, Earl's. They made their auntie laugh while we ate my favorite meal, buffalo chicken wings and a chicken Caesar salad. I couldn't enjoy my red wine that day as it's really frowned upon one day before surgery. After lunch, we took the top down of my sister's VW Black Bug with eyelashes for headlights and drove down to the Spanish Banks on the kids' side of Vancouver. I walked out on the sand as far as it could go with my precious niece, who rubbed my arm when she could sense my nervousness. The day seemed way too perfect to be a day before surgery. Their company and the beauty of British Columbia filled my soul, not to mention all the hundreds of people that were praying for me as I narrowed the countdown to surgery, down to 24 hours. When we got home from the beach, I went to the drugstore to get the antimicrobial soap that I had to wash myself with that night, and then the next morning. It had a horrible smell. In some ways, it felt like I was getting myself ready for death row. I did not like this feeling. I forced myself to take each step to prepare for surgery as the heaviness started to settle again. Thank God for lighthearted 18-year-olds when you're going through a hard time. I made a joke that I needed to get my head in the game and opened up the High School Musical selection on Spotify to get your head in the game. My niece started mimicking playing basketball and I started to sing and point to my head. I gotta get my head in the game. Gotta get my head in the game. Thinking about Zac Efron moving around the basketball court made me smile. I always love a good Zac Efron image. And movement helped dispel the swirling anxiety in my body. I took one last microbial shower and tried to get some sleep. I was to be at the hospital for surgery check-in at 5:30 a.m. the next morning. Once again, my sister was a rock star, waking up with me and taking me to the hospital, to Vancouver General. As we drove to the hospital, we repeated together, "High vibes, high vibes, high vibes, high vibes," while we put our hands up in the air. It was amazing what a difference that made, psyching myself up like I was ready for the big game or for a big battle. I had to get my head in the game. When we got to the parking lot, we both noticed the amazing acoustics at 5 in the morning and started pretending we were the Little Mermaid. It actually echoed back to me. That gave me calm as well. I was really curious about the echoing in the parkade, and it again distracted me for a moment. I forced myself to take each step forward to the admitting office. As I got closer, I could see the look of fear on the other people's faces waiting for their surgeries. Some people's faces are full of fear, more than others, but they were all nervous. I was so grateful for my happy, laughing sister to keep my spirit light. Every time she saw my face slide into hopelessness, she looked at me and said, "High vibes, high vibes." I would laugh and join in. Once I was checked into the hospital and had my GPS tracker on me, we took the directions towards the surgery unit at Vancouver General. I was surprised at my calm. I know it was because of all the support and prayers of friends and family. There was no question I was being held, right when I needed it most. The smiley nurse with the pretty false lashes gave me a fresh set of antiseptic wipes and the laminated piece of plastic that told me where to wipe each part of my body to make sure I was extra clean before surgery. My sister helped me focus on the task at hand as I was having a difficult time concentrating. After I was all wiped down, the bubbly resident anesthesiologist came close to my bed and explained what was going to happen. I was so relieved to feel his jovial spirit. What a difference kindness and joy makes in a time like this. Okay, we're here to get rid of those abnormal vessels. You can go back to having everything perfect above and below. His positivity was contagious. I smiled at the thought of not worrying about my fistula bursting ever again. It had been such a burden on me the last year. never knowing when it was going to happen and I could be in a state of emergency. He explained where they were going to put in the IV for the anesthetic, and then they started wheeling me into the operating room. I looked at my sister one last time, squeezed her hand, and said goodbye. It was showtime. They pushed me down the hall towards the OR. I was scared, but the smiling nurse's face close to mine appeased me. At the last moment, I saw the double doors open to the left of me. They seemed to quickly swing my gurney to the right and then backed me into the OR. As the double doors opened, I looked up to see the most beautiful scaping view of the downtown Vancouver and the Howe Sound Mountains behind the cityscape. It was such an incredible view right to see right before lights out. I knew everything was going to be okay. I woke up almost 5 hours later, face up to someone asking me where I was and what surgery I had had. I looked at the clock and saw it was almost 12. My surgery had gone almost 5 hours. It was supposed to be 3. I was happy that I could still do math. Without a hitch, I said, "Suboccipital bilateral craniotomy." The nurse laughed and smiled. "Wow, you get an A+. I was so happy I was lucid and then tried to wiggle my toes. Yes, they wiggled. Next, I circled my wrist and fanned my fingers. Again, success. I spent the next few hours in recovery until they wheeled me up to the ICU. It was there I was blessed with two angels named Brianne and Audrey, who watched over me and cared for me for the next 36 hours. In fact, they cared for me so well, I didn't want to leave the ICU the next night. I was really scared about the thought of being in a room with other patients. I had heard that the rooms were packed and contained all walks of life. At the end of day 2 in the hospital, Brianne lovingly came into my room and told me that I had to move to the neuro ward, not neuro ICU anymore. I pleaded, "No, I don't want to leave here, just let me stay." Brianne and the care aide sort of chuckled, "But you don't need to be in intensive care. You can't stay here if you're not intensive." "Details, details," I laughed. I was doing so well, I actually walked up to the other ward on foot. Brianne held me closely and my sweet sister carried my things to settle in my new room. We walked into the dark room and I saw one older gentleman sleeping in the corner. Then I looked to the other side of the room and saw two creepy eyes peer out from behind the curtain to see who had just arrived in his room. Fear set in again. The new nurse told me she was going to take out my catheter. "No, no, please don't. I don't want to have to get up to use the bathroom with these two men in here." I was just disgusted at the thought of having to use the same bathroom as a bunch of other people that I had no idea who they were. I appeased her for the night and she let me keep my catheter. My sister and Brianne got me tucked in and said goodnight. I wondered how I would rest with two strange men on either side of me. I was woken up again around midnight to notice a kind, dark-skinned lady move in beside me and the creepy, peering eyes man. I was so relieved she was there. Sorry. Still fresh. With the help of the hydromorphine, I was able to get a good night's sleep. The next morning, I woke up and would learn it was my turn to give hope. As I was resting in my bed, I could hear a variety of specialists come in to talk to the kind lady beside me. It started with a regular doctor asking about her weakness in her left hand and when it started. The next specialist said they were going to send her for an MRI. I had such compassion for her as she walked through the diagnostic process within hours. Towards the end of the day, my sister and I listened on as we had nowhere else to go and heard the neurologist say the words no one ever wants to hear. "I'm sorry, ma'am, but you have a brain tumor. We're going to have to operate on Sunday." My heart gushed with compassion as I could feel her and her husband's sadness from feet away. Just a thin blue cloth lay between us. My sister looked at me and covered her mouth, and tears started to leak from her compassionate eyes. We wanted to pull back the curtain and give her a big hug, but we knew they needed space to process, and it wasn't our job to invade their bubble at that moment. They needed to feel like they were alone. So I sent them the only thing I knew to send. I sent them hope. Over the next few hours, we listened on as they called family members to tell them the news. Between intermittent sniffles, they would say, "Please don't tell anyone, but this is what we've heard." It was sad. Very, very sad. But from my journey, I've learned that feeling sorry for someone does not help them. We must put that emotion into action. And that action is hope and prayer. I continue to pray for them and send them hope. The next day when I was about to leave, I wanted to instill some sort of positivity to them before I left. But I didn't want to cross that sacred sheath between us and impose on their privacy. They could hear me leave, and I heard a quiet, "Best of luck," from behind the curtain. That was my opportunity. I took a moment to give back some of all the positive vibes and prayers I had been given over the last year from so many in my life. I looked at the kind, gentle lady and pointed to the new scar on the back of my head. I said, "If I can do this, you can do this. You've got this." A smile started to peel across her face. "Thank you," she said shyly. "I'm praying for you, and I'm believing you will have a perfect surgery with a great outcome." It felt so good to share back the hope. It felt so good to spread light. And that is what I've learned. And that is what I have learned from this neurosurgery journey. The power of hope. The power of belief. The power of prayer. Because hope truly is the wind that fuels our souls. It's a gift we can freely give that has the ability to save and change lives. I hope you enjoy a little bit of comic relief with my interview with my sister and my wonderful, hilarious, sweet nieces after this. Hi everyone, I'm 6 days post-op, just sitting here with my wonderful sister and my fantabulous nieces, Gracie and Rose. Say hi everyone!
Hi! Hello! Oh my gosh!
That is really loud on my titanium plate! So Susie, what did you learn from the journey to neurosurgery?
Man, I learned that the healthcare professionals at VGH, let me just turn off my Instagram, are the best. I have a hair on my tongue. And I just thought, man, we are so, so lucky to have healthcare that is free and that
people who are actually healthcare workers.
From people that are extremely skilled. And if we had to have this exam.
This neurosurgery exam
in the United States of America, it would have cost at least $150,000.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So wow. Basically,
holla!
States,
we would be poor broke if we lived in the States.
And Gracie, what did you feel about watching your Auntie Wendy go through neurosurgery?
About it because I knew you were going to be okay.
Oh, and that really helped me get through it.
Yep, it's just a tiny incision in your head and then it'll be fine.
Oh, every time I get up it hurts. Yep. How about you, Rose? A little bit ago. How did you feel when you came into the ICU and saw me laying there?
Well, first I was thinking, my thoughts that day went as follows. I hope Auntie Wendy's okay. Oh shit, I have my midterm right now. Oh, I'm doing my midterm, but I hope everybody's okay. Oh shit, I got a parking ticket because I had a typo in my parking app. I still hope everybody's okay. All right, off to the hospital. Oh wait, nope, she's still in surgery. Okay, I guess I'm gonna go change at home. I really hope she's okay.
Aww.
And then I went to the hospital and then I walked like 20 minutes from my parking and I was thinking, oh, she's okay. And then I saw you and you were okay.
Oh, and that's the midterm that you got 15% on?
That is correct.
Well, I feel like you should get a rewrite because you cannot focus when you're worried about your aunt and brain surgery.
Okay, this is the thing. I was actually considering using you as an excuse to drop the course and to get my money back, but apparently it is now too late.
Well, then you should use me as an excuse to rewrite it.
To rewrite it. Well, yeah, I'll use you as an excuse to not look embarrassing in front of the TAs. To be like, please help me. My aunt had brain surgery.
Yeah, you can't focus when you're wondering how I'm doing.
Exactly.
Well,
you guys all made such a difference in my journey to neurosurgery. Yeah, we are. I'm wrapping it up. Okay, thanks for coming to my brain surgery.